Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from Guns N' Roses, Duff McKagan. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Rich Banks calls in as we crown the champion of Banks Bracket Madness. And now, in his family, growing up, all physical affection was considered inappropriate. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in and thanks for sharing. I love when you send me a tweet about who you shared this pod with. It's all free. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Hey, Gina. That's not cool.
All right. I have an interesting letter from a father here with a suggestion for a band name for his Eagle Scout son I want to get into in a second. First, a little devastation, which was I was working. I came home on Saturday. I walked in and my wife had...
Your family had come back?
Oh, man.
Your family returned?
It was brutal.
Papa!
Lynette had returned to explain that she'd bought a couple of tickets for her and Sonny to go see Shazam. And I thought, Shazam's, Zach Levi, nice guy, cool guy, car guy, like him, know him a little bit, rooting for him, sort of a, there's a couple of guys like Ryan Reynolds and stuff. They've been knocking around for a long time, trying to get a bite at that apple, that big franchise or whatever. Just, they got a lot of bites at the apple, but it just never worked out. Now it has.
Yeah. And clicks and put them over the top.
And also, I remember thinking, I checked that one on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it was like 92 with the critics and 90 with the audience, which is just where you want to be in terms of going and seeing a movie. That's simpatico, and that's where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And then I walked into Sonny's room, and so what happened is Lynette had bought the tickets for her and Sonny to go, but then decided she was tired, so I should take him. So I said, fine. Shazam's
just
fine.
Just another superhero movie for the A's, man.
Yeah, I'm fine. I never go to any movies, and this is being foisted on me, but it's probably it's a good thing. It gets you out of the house. You go see these movies. And by the way, sitting at 90% plus on Rotten Tomatoes, how can we go wrong with
this?
You're
for a treat.
So then I walked in to Sonny's room, and I said, what time? We got the 4:20 of Shazam? And he's like, that's Captain Marvel. And I'm like, Shazam, right? Captain Marvel, right? He's like, different. That's a different movie. And I'm like,
The different studio, Dad.
I'm like, yeah, what about Shazam? And she's like, that's not out yet.
What
and
about
I'm like,
Shazam?
I think it is out. And he's like, well, I don't know if it's out or not, but we got Captain Marvel. And then it's like, okay, now I'm going to go back to the computer and I'm going to check. And I hit Rotten Tomatoes, 78 with the critics. Like, okay, that's fine. Upper 70s for a movie like this. Okay, all right, it's no 92, but it's a 78. That'll work. Let me just check the people. 58. What's going on? Oh, she's got fallopian tubing, and her best friend's a black single lady with a precocious 9-year-old. God damn it.
I don't know if this makes it better or worse for you, but this film was famously, you know, review bombed by all the better dudes who don't like, apparently don't like female superheroes. I don't know. I don't care. Please don't tweet me. I don't care.
So you went.
Not good. The people had this one right. It had a bunch of that stuff like, It bothers me in every movie where like somebody has a flashback. Mm-hmm. You know, it had all the parts you wanted for the woke nation and everything. And there's a couple of scenes. I think we can all agree this in movies. Like, where people jump into aircraft they've never flown before. And at the first scene, they have to run to the aircraft and they have to jump in.
Right.
And when they run the aircraft and jump in, the person next to them, like Jeff Goldblum or whatever, is yelling, go, go, go. And they're going, I don't even know how to work this thing.
But all of a sudden, they're very adept. But
at a certain point when they're coming back and they have to fly through Monument Valley, they're like, I'm going to go hit the ailerons with the reverse thrusters. And they like reach up and hit two toggle bolts.
Too
and
late, barrel roll, barrel roll.
The thing does the Cobra move and the guy's like flying. It's like, how did you become certified on this thing? You just flew one way. This would take years in a simulator.
Not just certified, expert level.
Expert level. Like, we're going to get inverted here. It's going to fly right past. Like, how do you don't know how to fly this thing, person.
I saw this movie, too. The Captain Marvel.
Well, let me ask you this.
I thought it was slightly above average.
Slightly.
Better than it is worse, but it's not a great movie.
No, it's not great.
No.
And I'm trying to think of where the critics would have it if it was starring a dude and the friend was just pasty and white.
Danny McBride.
There's a couple things. It would not get the score it got, number one. Number two, there is kind of there's something sad about it, which is her best friend is this young black pilot, female, got the precocious 9-year-old daughter, single mom, blah, blah, blah. There's something slightly racist in all these movies, which is if you come across the young white woman with the 8-year-old daughter, at some point there's a picture of dad
you have to address
on the mantelpiece it goes, if he hadn't died over to Crete, he'd be, you know how he'd want it. Bud would want us to soldier on, you know, whatever. It's so sad, but with the single black mom being so ubiquitous now,
moving on.
Not discussed. Moving on. We know it's like, where's dad or any, there's no pictures on the mantelpiece. It's like, it's kind of racist. It's like, oh, she's black. She doesn't have a husband. We don't have,
draw your own conclusion.
You're like writing the script going, but then we have to address this? Yep. No. She's black chick. We don't need to talk about that. Which, if you're writing a script and you have a young white woman or young Asian woman, God forbid Jewish, we assume the guy killed himself, but young Jewish, whatever, with the young dad. At some point, you need a little picture on the mantelpiece where you go, I wish dad was still alive, or
one
whatever.
One sentence of backstory.
Whatever it is. Yep. Whatever it is.
Not necessary.
Not necessary.
Wow.
Sad.
Good point.
Now, Brian, you tell me if this is right or wrong.
Okay. And I saw Shazam this weekend, too.
It
was amazing. No, it wasn't amazing. It was pretty good.
I know. All right. This half of the show brought to you by LifeLock. Enter Adam. TommyJohn.com/Adam. BetOnline.ag. Enter podcast one. So there's a thing in movies. I don't like when Rocky does this either. And I brought it up many times, which is I'm going to fight Clubber Lang. I'm going to show him speed. I'm going to show him footwork. I'm going to show him whatever. And then at some point, and round five, I'm just going to bear down and get into a slugfest with the guy who's got 26 pounds of muscle on me and who knocked me out last time. And he's a wrecking machine. Yeah. But don't worry, I want it more.
Yeah,
and now he's going to be punching me in the center of the ring, and I'm going to be yelling, is that all you got?
Yeah, that's Rocky's strategy at one point with Clubber Lang. It's so bad.
Right.
It's so bad. Roundhouse to the head. It's so bad.
Right.
That ain't so bad.
Well,
Rocky
listen, here's what I can sign off on. I can sign off that this guy is a wrecking machine and you want Adam toe to toe, like Sugar Ray Leonard did with Roberto Duran. Roberto Duran is slower and not as nifty in the footwork, but he taunted him.
Okay.
He made jokes about his wife. He got inside his head and he got Sugar Ray to get into a slugfest with him, and he beat up Sugar Ray because he got Sugar Ray to fight his fight. Mm-hmm. Second fight, Sugar Ray said, I'm going back to what I do best, which is balls of the feet, dancing around, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, and Roberto Duran quit. Mm-hmm. That's the no-moss fight.
Right.
That's a fight where, like, in the eighth round, it's like, I got a stomachache. Like, I'm sitting down. Like, I can't touch this guy. Okay, that I will sign off on. I will not sign off on Sugar Ray Leonard going back to what got him there, which is the quick movement, and then dropping it all 3 minutes into the fight and going, we're going back to Slugfest.
And offering his head
right.
defenselessly.
Now, you tell me if there's something I'm missing about this movie, but at some point when the star needs it most, she just has a flashback of her being a young girl. Like go-kart racing, playing softball, doing everything.
Yeah.
And the music swells, and she decides that she's not going to take it anymore through a flashback.
At the critical moment, like in battle, she has a flashback to all the times in her life that she fell and then picked herself up and she has her strength. That's a trope of these movies a lot is the discovery of your powers, the digging deep from within. It's not a lot of strategy. It's more just like
it's been within you all along.
Yeah, but believe in yourself even more.
My thing. I can look back on all the times the door was shut on a young ace man or he was told he wasn't funny, whatever, and then I can bear down and try to be funnier, but I can't fly. You know what I mean? And
well, have you tried really hard?
I can't make a ball, my fist up and fire at somebody and have some energy pulse, like knock them over. Sure. Now, I'm not sure how that works. I'm still confused, and I'm getting a little more confused in terms of superheroes. Like, what do you possess, and then what don't you possess? Right. And then I'm also getting a little tired of the energy pulse. The energy pulse seems to knock everything over but not hurt anybody. Like, it sends the bad guy flying across.
There's no recoil.
But he gets up again. Yeah. I'm not even sure what it is. It's just, you put your fist out, we do the shockwave thing, we'll fix it all in CGI, and then it'll knock everything over, but it won't
It won't hurt anybody.
It'll hurt extras. Like, it'll hurt the people we don't really know, but it's not really going to hurt the main guy.
Well, you just figured it out.
Maybe
it only hurts extras.
Maybe you don't want to see Shazam.
It only hurts five and under.
A lot of that. You know what this is? This is an extrapolation of professional wrestling. They're doing things that would kill any person jumping off the top rope and doing a somersault, but because it's all, it's part of the scene, they just pull it off and they get up and fight some more.
Yeah. All right. The bad guys had weird rubber faces seemed seemed weird to me.
Yeah.
But so where did she get the power?
It was always within her. You know what I mean? Like it came.
She had a flashback.
This is a trope of these type of movies where, you dig deep and you discover the power within and blah, blah, blah.
Well, anyway, I thought I was going to Shazam. And I got screwed with this one.
Shazam's a little better.
Just a little.
Well, here's the thing. So it's like,
now, the critics have it in the 90s.
I know.
The people. All right. How about the people in the 90s versus the people?
It's In the sense that Bohemian Rhapsody is crowd pleasing, this is too. This is Deadpool for teens. This is Sonny's new favorite movie.
Okay.
Like, it's Deadpool
the wrong movie.
It's Deadpool minus the cursing and the extreme violence. This is like it's irreverent action.
Okay,
it's fun. It's crowd pleasing.
I got it, but it's not Deadpool.
No.
I'm a little done with the pulses being fired. A bullet, a sword, I can wrap my head around that. I can wrap my head around you being able to run 1,000 miles an hour or fly or anything else. The pulse, I'm not sure what that is.
Is the pulse the new lens flare? Because that was the thing.
Yeah, it's just everybody sort of bears down, makes a fist, and a large pulse comes in. And it's effective on a lot of things, but not necessarily the one person they're trying to hurt.
I think there was a lot of that in Shazam.
I
think there was a lot of that.
What is I know how things get in vogue, and maybe that's just it.
Did they just figure out how to perfect that on CGI?
It must be. This must be the 70s sitcom version of souffle humor, which is every sitcom I saw from Bewitched or the Brady Bunch or whatever, it's always like, we're making a souffle, and then the dad would come home and slam the door.
No!
I'm so angry. Whoa. They'd go check the souffle. By the way, what if the souffle fell? Would we have to throw it out? I feel like I'd eat it anyway.
Eat it,
that's grounds for divorce.
I've eaten pizza off the ground that landed business side down. So I'm pulling cheese and stuff off the floor. I would eat a souffle that had fallen.
Arguably improved.
Can I make a suggestion?
Oh, you're going to fuck that chick? No, she doesn't have a beehive. Her hair's all down. So no can do.
Can't do it.
No.
If you're not in the mood to see a movie, I'm sure both of you have been there. You better have, Adam. But we spent 5 hours at a place near your house this weekend.
Oh, just concept.
And the 3-year-old, after 5 hours, because it was closed, was closing, said, can we stay so much longer? Descanso Gardens is so enchanting and magical. Running
especially
around.
Especially for the rain, I would imagine.
Oh, my God. And the little kids just get to run free. It's like the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's about a mile from my house.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's I went to a wedding there once, and I also filmed Howard Stern's Son of the Beach there when we're supposed to be in Maui.
Oh, yeah. Sure, sure.
So there's a lot of filming that goes on there in the jungle and all that stuff. All right, let me put myself in a better mood, and then I'll go right back to a bad mood with some other news. But I got a letter from a fellow by the name of Richard, and he's got a good name, Richard Hood, Dick Hood, Uncut.
Uncut.
Yeah. Dear Mr. Grohl, I'd like to request a congratulatory letter on behalf of my son, Peter Hood, on the occasion of him earning scouting's highest honor, namely the Eagle Scout Award.
Dick Hood and Peter Hood should be related. little Peter Hood.
Additionally, it would be much fun if you would like to suggest a choice for a name for his rock band.
Oh,
he's in it with two other Boy Scout friends, so you know they rock. Because when a guy wears a kerchief and has merit badges on his sleeve, that guy rocks. Yeah, hide the ladies when these guys blow to town.
Kiss your ladies goodbye, fellas.
Yeah. They're having trouble coming up with a name.
Okay.
So he said he'd get a kick out of that. And I thought, what'd be a name? Good name. You know, I threw around a few ideas like Narthex. Just has an edge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Weird sort of cross, you know, from, you know, sort of, I don't know, use some umlauts or something.
I was gonna Narthex. Say, yeah. You can stylize it with just a big X, you know, mm-hmm. like North X.
A little edgy. Then I thought, wait a minute, this kid's name is Hood. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, how about the HMS Hood?
Hmm.
Okay.
HMS Hood was the biggest battleship that Britain had in its fleet.
He's not enough of a nerd already.
Sorry, kids.
Hey, we're here to rock it tonight.
I'm going to bring the HMS
Google
Hood.
It.
You guys are going to be praising me in a second
Made
for this
after
idea.
Made a British battleship from many decades ago.
Well, his name is Hood.
Anyway, 2, 3, 4.
He's a Hood. HMS Hood. Uh-huh. It was one of the pride of the British fleet. Sunk.
Oh, no.
By the Bismarck. The biggest German, the unsinkable Bismarck. That was the German battleship early in World War II.
Off the stage, fag!
Sunk in 3 minutes. 1,400 and 15 souls on board. Three came to the surface.
Oh.
Three.
Are there three dudes in the band?
And they've now made a band.
Oh, my God.
There were three.
I
had to look it up. I was like, oh, wait, was there seven? Is there five? Like, I always get that number wrong. Three.
Wow.
Three.
Power trio.
Dudes. Three dudes.
Wow.
You're on a battleship with 1,400 people on that battleship, and one Beatles song later, you are floating in the Atlantic Ocean, and there's you and two other heads.
Wow.
And that's it. That's the entire ship.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
A lot of mythology.
But I was like, please let there be the same number of guys that are in this band.
A lot of good sailors out of work.
That's good. Okay. The backstory's good.
So I'm going with the HMS Hood.
All right. Can I offer an alternative?
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, were three guys survived out of 1,500?
No, that your backstory is superior by far. But they're Boy Scouts, right? So they go into the woods. They have bug
Eagle
spray.
Scouts, yeah.
Eagle Scouts. They have bug repellent. Mm-hmm. And they're Boy Scouts. So they probably dealt with this before. Just
off.
How about repellent?
That's off.
Come on.
I'm sticking with HMS Hood right now. But because of the story. They'd explain it during the part, like when Bruce Springsteen talks about the factory being shut down, a lot of good men,
a lot of good sailors floating out there, floating around.
Yeah, you do that thing where you have, you know, you're strumming the guitar, you're laying down a little beat, and you're doing a little chatter before you're talking it up before the show, before you strike that power chord.
Okay. So, and Peter has to be the lead singer, obviously. It wouldn't be called Hood.
Well, Van Halen was, named after, the guitarist and the drummer.
That's right.
So HMS Hood it is.
HMS Hood.
I'll offer the merit badges.
Yeah, that's not bad. He's a great
folk band.
He's he really good. He plays the drums and guitar.
Oh,
fortune.
Wow.
Fortunately, not at the same
time. It's a busy stage show.
He's a great son with talents in music and photography. And he has his own YouTube channel as well.
Give it a shout.
PD Productions. Also, he's recently organized a trip to the top of Half Dome in Yosemite.
Oh, my God.
And also climbed Angel's Landing in Zion National Park when he was only 9.
Damn.
He bought a 92 Corvette that he earned himself.
Jesus.
Through selling crack cocaine.
Oh, my God.
No. And wants to start a YouTube channel about cars. So
get off my turf, kid.
Yeah. Thankfully. And most importantly, he's a believer in Christ, which will lead me to my next one. So anyway, thanks to Mr. Richard Hood and HMS Hood.
That's, put your hands together for Adam's real son.
Yeah. My son steered me to a 58 on Rotten Tomatoes. That's what my son's doing all day. All right. I had another thought over the weekend, which is I don't know why I was looking up Rebecca Schaefer. She's the poor gal who was sort of assassinated on her stoop of her apartment in West Hollywood in like 1989. She was in a...
That's what you do when your family's away?
I don't know what I was looking for, something on a computer, and somehow she popped up, and I was like, oh, yeah, what happened there? She did My Sister Sam with Pam Dauber.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think her name was... Morgan Mindy. She had a sitcom. It was like a hit sitcom in the 80s. And
this is the dude who had like 18 months or something? Something ridiculous after he killed
No, that's another gal who's... that's Dominique Dunn.
Oh, okay.
That guy didn't get much anything. This guy... who was a stalker, got life without the possibility of parole. But as I was reading the story, that I thought was interesting, and I think we could all, I don't know, chew on this a little bit in terms of how fragile or bizarre life can be. This guy was stalking somebody else. This guy was a stalker with another client. This guy was stalking another young girl who was like a activist, and
Alyssa Milano.
She died in a plane crash. And so this guy went...
Oh, he's forced to find the new...
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Samantha Smith was her name. She was a child peace activist, and he was stalking her. And then now when you're a stalker and there's no one to stalk, you got to move on.
Yeah.
And he moved on to the next one. Yeah. And then, you know, some point later, gunned her down on her porch. Like how... So I don't know if this person hadn't died in a plane crash, would this guy never have stalked Rebecca
Schaefer,
right. So weird, right? So there's a plane crash at some point. You go, how's that going to affect me? And you go, I don't know. I didn't know anyone on the plane. Yeah. And then somehow you're dead.
That's crazy.
Much like, I haven't brought it up in a while, but the, I think it was Hinckley, or no,
that was
you're talking
the other
about
one,
the
John
Chapman,
Lennon. Chapman.
Chapman.
Committed suicide, essentially. Just took his car to the beach in Hawaii, parked it at 5 in the morning, like overlooking the sunrise, put the pipe in, the exhaust pipe and into the car, and he was just committing suicide, and he would have committed suicide, but some surf fisherman showed up and was like, hey, get this guy out of the car and get him to the hospital, and some guy who happened to be fishing. Surf fishing. I never know if these guys are the best fishermen or the laziest fishermen or the poorest fishermen. I've never seen anyone catch anything. I've seen the guy stand out mid-thigh in the surf and cast out there, but I've never seen that guy catch anything.
Yeah.
And I always thought about it,
wait
a minute, that's where I go with my Ziffy board. Are there fish? Right. Like, what do you
catch?
What
can you really get?
Nothing.
I can tell you this.
You can get hepatitis C. That's what you can get.
There was one year about 8 years ago where I had a fishing license, and my boyfriend at the time, we would go do this all the time. You do not catch anything.
Okay.
Is anyone, it's
a drinking activity.
Look, you make fun of ice fishing all you want. Those guys head home with a gunny sack full of fish and a nice bus.
Yeah. With salmon, yeah.
These guys, no place to set the beer, right? You're standing out in your jeans mid-thigh in the surf, and you just cast out into the waves.
Mm. Yeah.
And nothing ever happened.
I guess not.
You ever seen...
You don't get anything big, that's for sure.
You ever seen anything back on the beach?
Nope.
the dudes on the pier out here catch fish. I see.
Yeah,
like
I know. Go find a pier or boat or something, or don't, or lake, or don't fish.
You don't have to have a license for that.
So I also kind of wonder about the people that are like swimming in the surf too. Like, hey, you got some of the barb on it out there, right. And a guppy. All right.
Don't
anyway,
anything shiny.
That guy finds him, pulls him out, and then he goes on to murder John Lennon. So you have to wonder about that. I don't know about this plane crash or like what the how old this gal was.
She was
or,
13.
She was 13?
Yeah.
He was stalking her. She was doing the Lord's work at 13. That's an insane trajectory, right? Yeah, I'm 13. I'm a child peace activist, and I die in a plane crash? Like, I wonder who she was.
And why was he stalking her? Like, is she a notable person? Was she an actress?
Well, I can tell you what I've understood about some of these people with like limited experiences, they just see a picture in a newspaper, you know, local peace activist makes good or whatever. They just look at that person and go, all right, now I'm stalking that person, I guess. Max Patty may have something. I don't know.
Let me ask you a related question while I look for that. If you come across the Mark David Chapman's, not knowing that he's going to someday kill John Lennon, of course. You come across a person in a car with the tube, passed out, possibly dead, possibly alive. Do you call what do you do? I mean, my first thought is, oh, of course I'd like to save this person, but this person has gone to extraordinary lengths to end their life. That's
to make
their
that
choice.
Decision.
Yeah.
Let me put on my Mike August hat, which is a hat I borrowed from my brother-in-law. So I'm going to put mileage on my hat. You guys are what he calls empty bags. You do whatever you want.
Okay.
I do it, I get sued.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Because what happens, the person ends up with brain damage and on life support, and the family sues me.
No. August has a law background. He knows about Good Samaritan laws. If you try to rescue that person, you're trying to save their life.
No, I get it. And then this one, which always bothers me. Anyone could sue. All right. Anyone could beat any given team.
But what do you do? That person has gone two steps. Like, they've thought, this isn't like a, you know, cry for help, you know, pills or slicing the wrist.
This is where my atheist gene really kicks into overdrive. I'm like, well, I got a couple thoughts. One is, I agree, that person has decided to do this. Maybe they have
terminal illness.
Yeah. Right. On the other hand, I am kind of curious, like, how old they are.
Yeah.
Because if they're 17 and they just got dumped by their girl this is their move.
Not reasonable.
I'd like to intervene here. So
you got to scope out the car.
Unfortunately, I want to see if it's a good ride. Mm-hmm. If they made any modifications to the rims or anything else, which I have a beef with, obviously. I wouldn't intervene if they got the wrong rims on there. Mm-hmm. I think in general, I would reflexively just try to intervene, but I could not tell you for sure, but I think I would just get involved. You have any more on this, Max Pata?
Yeah, so this guy, Robert Bardo, he was a 16-year-old kid, 15, 16, obsessed with Samantha Smith, a 13-year-old child peace activist who got really famous because she wrote a letter to the Soviet leader asking why relations were so tense between the U.S. and the Soviet Union.
And they invited her.
Yeah, so they invited her. She was on Carson. She's the biggest media thing.
Oh.
Yeah, and so she became
like 85, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So she became America's youngest ambassador. That's what they called her. And she was really famous because she would travel all over, and she was featured in all the presidential or in a presidential election as like the child spokesman for it. So
she had a big televised meeting with the ambassador in Russia. It was a big deal.
Yeah, so this guy, Robert, was obsessed with her. She dies on a private plane crash in 85, and so he decides to turn his obsession towards Rebecca Schaefer from My Sister Sam, and it becomes obsessed with her.
Did he go right to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So My Sister Sam was on in 85 or 86 or whatever?
I assume so, because it just says right after the death.
So I guess
86,
the question is, can you stalk multiple people? I don't really think that's the M.O.
Well, again, it gets interesting after that.
Okay.
So he writes Schaefer and then gets just like an employee fan service back. Thanks for writing an autograph picture or whatever. And feels that's not enough. Goes.
That's why I'm reading this guy's Eagle Scout stuff. I don't want him to shoot me on my porch. Yeah.
This guy's in Arizona. He travels to L.A., tries to get on set of the show, turned away from security, tries again, turned away again. So then goes home, heads back to Tucson, and finds a new obsession in Debbie Gibson, Madonna, and Tiffany.
Wow. Yeah. This guy does have some range.
He's casting a wide net.
Yeah.
And so while he's obsessing over these three now, he sees Rebecca Schaefer in a sex scene in a movie called Scenes from the Class Struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And believes, quote, she lost her innocence.
What's it called?
Scenes from the Class Struggle.
Yes.
And she should be punished for becoming, quote, another Hollywood whore.
Oh,
Jesus.
So he hires a PI to get Rebecca Schaefer's address, gets his brother to help him find a gun, and he gets the idea about hiring the PI from another stalker who is accused for stabbing, what's her name, Teresa Saldana?
Yeah, Saldana or something. Yeah.
So he gets...
Oh, yeah, she had a horrible story. Do you guys remember that one? She was an actress. I think
Raging
a movie...
Bull. She was Joe Pesci's wife in Raging Bull.
And she was stabbed multiple times by her stalker. But did she live?
Yeah, she survived it.
Oh, Jesus.
Crazy.
But anyway, so he goes to her apartment and knocks on her door. And weirdly, Schaefer was waiting on a script for the Godfather Part 3, which he was auditioning for. So she answered it herself.
Oh, we ended up with Sofia Coppola. This is a nightmare.
Wow.
And she answers it, and it's him, and they share a short conversation. He shows her the picture and the autograph, like, look, you sent me this. And she says, thanks, and says, please don't come back again to my home. So he goes, gets some food, comes back an hour later.
Sure.
She answers again, this time with a, quote, cold look on her face, according to Bardo. He pulls out a gun from a brown paper bag, shoots her in the chest point blank, flees. The neighbors called paramedics, and she was pronounced dead 30 minutes after arriving to Cedar Sinai.
She was like 20 or something.
19.
Good heavens.
Yeah. Well, when I do my show where I confront the parents and go, what's up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This will be one of my...
Yeah.
What's going on?
My God.
Oh, excuse me. She was 21.
So. I'll...
It's harrowing.
I want to talk to the parents of the PI, the parents of the brother, the guy. Yeah. Just all the folks in this.
All the key players.
What's up?
Yeah.
What's up?
On this episode of What's Up...
Very, very weirdly, too, Adam. So he was holding a copy of The Catcher in the Rye when he murdered her.
Jesus.
Which he tossed onto the roof of a building as he fled. And he insists it's only coincidental because Mark David Chapman was also carrying Catcher in the Rye.
That can't be coincidence.
I know.
No.
A little what's up. I don't know. You know, my daughter's turning 13 in a couple of months. Jesus. She was explaining to me last night, this is a big one. So she's going to need a lot of stuff.
Don't let her read Catcher in the Rye.
But I don't know. If she wanted to become an ambassador and go on the world tour, I'd probably go, let's hang out in Descanso Gardens a little longer. It's also weird when people let their kids just go out on tour, you know? Noble cause and everything, but still a little.
Well, back to the Michael Jackson documentary. You know?
Right.
It's like, why? The parents, why? Why? How does this seem like a good idea to you?
Was it like a private jet or
six passengers
on a private jet, like a Lear jet?
Yeah, all of them died, including the two members of the crew.
Going from where to do what? I'll let you look up that. But anyway, so I don't know. You guys have fun trying to figure out life. I'm done. IRS warning. Oh, talking about criminals. They got scam emails that come with an attachment labeled tax account transcript or something similar. And a subject line with a phrase like tax transcript. Looks like a tax return summary. Very tempting to open. Do not open it. It's malware. Remember, the IRS never sends unsolicited emails. Cyber criminals can use your info to file a return in your name. Good thing there's a LifeLock with the added power of Norton Security. It'll help if this happens to you. LifeLock helps fix identity theft related fraud. And Norton can protect your devices against threats you can't easily see or fix on your own. It's 2019, people. Let's get some LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor transactions in all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton is power protection for your identity and devices for tax season and beyond. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code Adam for 10% off your first year. That's promo code Adam at LifeLock.com or 1-800-LIFELOCK for 10% off.
She was just flying home to Maine and... that's when the plane crashed.
Yeah, it's from Logan.
Sad.
Max Zapata. All right.
Is there any wonder J.D. Salinger is reclusive after, like, you know, the author of Catcher in the Rye? Like, he wrote this one seminal book, and, like, people interpret it and use it in weird and awful ways.
It's like who wrote Jaws, who had to start that foundation?
Peter Benchley.
to save all the sharks.
Yeah, right. Is Banks on?
Calling him right now.
All right. Do we want to play the bracket first, or do we want to?
We're getting him on the phone right now. Let's get him on the phone first. Okay. He's going to be part of it.
Okay. We'll talk to Rich Banks. Where's he? Arkansas?
Yeah, he lives in Arkansas.
What happened? He didn't make it to the PGA Tour?
I don't know.
All right. Well, you want to get him, or you want me to do my Mike Lindell story?
Yeah, we have it.
All right. We try to find Mike Lindell. That's the MyPillow guy. And the reason I bring him up is he came in on Take an E. I think it's up. And he's like one of these guys where he was into crack cocaine and powder cocaine as well, to be fair. And he was a serious junkie and like a serious mess. And he's a deeply religious guy. And then he formed this company and he quit doing drugs. And now he's doing some sort of outreach thing for drug addicts and blah, blah, blah. Now, I'll play a little clip of him when he was in studio. I think it's a little montage of him being a good dude.
It's from Take a Knee last week.
Now, again, I'm a full blown atheist, but I don't see any. I don't feel there's any harm in religion. And if you're a religious guy and you want to reach out to junkies or whatever, I got no beef with you. That's no problemo there. But anyway, there's Mike Lindell. I don't know how long it is. Was it? You got it? Go ahead.
150.
Go ahead.
I said, I want to wake up in the morning and never have the desire for these drugs, like alcohol, cigarettes, crack, cocaine, all these things. And I'll do this big calling you have for me. Everyone's got a calling. And I knew my bottom there, when people say, was that your bottom? I'm going, well, I knew one thing, that it was like the old dot on the old-fashioned black and white TVs where you turned it off and you turn it back on right before that little dot went out to come back to life.
Right, right.
And so that dot was going to go out that night, and my calling would be gone. That platform of this MyPillow, whatever God was going to use that for. So now, you know, with the. And if you fast forward a little bit with the addiction part now with my platform that I'm doing, I'm getting all these stories of hope where people can put in on a website, they'll put in their age and their addiction, like a 22-year-old opiate addict might not relate to a 50-year-old meth addict. But you put all these stories of hope of his age and his exact drug come down, and I'm like going to be their tour guide and say, hey, guys, now you've seen, there's the hope. Now go over here. Here's the help. And I have all the help, all these centers I've vetted, the ones that work, the faith-based one, Teen Challenge, Union Gospel, Salvation. And then I'm going to say, when you guys get out of that, I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to have paid mentors all over the country that I'm paying full-time careers because someone that they get out of treatment, one of the relapses is, my girlfriend didn't wait for me, or Uncle Ray died. You know, can you blame him? He went back to using. Well, I'm going to have an app, too, where they can punch that in and say, someone that's been
right,
through
Max
it that got out. You know,
you got it. We get it. All right. Now, so anyway, it's fine. He's a positive guy.
It's not a bad thing.
Has a lot of employees now. Mm. Pays a lot in taxes. But I was reading the tweets that were sent. There's a chain of tweets like, Mike Lindell, here they are.
You tweeted to the link to this show, it's a good listen and Mike's story is inspirational.
That was my mistake. So then
why would you do that?
The reply is...
So one of them is from at Larry Weiner. He writes, how sad, no one cares.
Oh.
another one you got was from at Slip Mode. It's just a bunch of crying emojis, crying laughing, because they think it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Another one is... His support of Trump negates anything positive he might have to say.
I don't know. Do things negate things? Like, I don't know. Henry Ford and Lindbergh were anti-Semites, but they built a lot of bombers, and then they bombed Germany into rubble. So does that negate all that they did for World War II?
You have good qualities and bad qualities.
I don't know that anything really even negates anything. It's still, you just did this.
Or good deeds and bad deeds. Yeah, you can be a complicated person.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, maybe.
negates all the good.
So after you said it was inspirational.
I wonder if there's any amount of good you could do.
Another guy writes, maybe it is inspirational, but I prefer he not use faith for profit.
And no, then, he's spending his money.
I, Yeah.
Hopefully you asked how he made the decision to sit in Trump's lap for that sweet, sweet pillow money.
Okay. I was like, I don't know. The guy's a religious guy. He was a junkie. Now he's clean and he's trying to help other junkies. I don't know. And I just tweeted out it's an inspirational story because the guy was a crack cocaine addict and now he's the My Pillow guy. But
yeah, strong opinions on this story that obviously they hadn't even listened to. But
all right, I don't know. See, regardless of who the guy votes for, I am on the happy side of the ledger because he's not stalking Rebecca Schaefer, shooting her. He's paying taxes and creating jobs. Right. That's just me. I have a crazy wiring where I just put people on the happy taxpayer side or the criminal
side
or the having way too many kids out of wedlock and not taking care of them side. Like, I just have you do the same. You guys get. If you get a few employees, everyone sort of lands on the, is that guy making me money or is that guy costing me money? And sometimes it's even and sometimes you don't know. But you get too many people on the costing me money side, you start to wonder and go, well, I wish I had more on this side.
Yeah.
That's me. All right. But anyway, that was my problem for mentioning that guys had an inspirational story.
I hope you learned your lesson.
I don't even know what people do other than he's My Pillow guy who was a junkie and now he sells pillows. All right. Rich Banks is on. All right. Oh, and Duff is here. All right. Let's pop up Rich. Rich Banks.
It's a great show. A lot of fun.
Dominates the music and the drops.
Rich, everybody loves your work. It's prolific. It's amazing. We're our jaws sit in our laps when we listen to you, and with a hearty assist from Mike Lynch and Brian on occasion as well.
More than a big assist from Lynch, but yeah, he's a lyrical genius. When I started doing those songs, I wrote all of them, and then Lynch popped in, and it's like, well, when Brian took his job, he started writing.
How dare you?
Wow, I mean, there's what, 260 something, I think I counted.
God, I don't even know.
Oh, wow, I don't know. Including intros and outros? Yeah, probably.
Do you have a favorite?
I got a few. I think In the Grotto, I know it's gone, but it's probably my favorite. This song is such a serious song. It's such a sad song, and then you add in, you know, As the Sperm Flies or whatever with the horrible Elvis impression. It's probably my favorite. Bald Boy I like just because that's Lynch at his best, which I wrote the verses. But then I sent it to him and I'm like, hey, I think you could play this. And he's like, where's the CB parts? So he wrote all the CB part down, which was great. And that made the song hilarious. But and then probably one that I don't think this one was played. Was it the Dead or Alive parody for Def Rat Guys, kind of from the old days? But yeah, I love that one for some reason. He's in there shitting, probably by.
Yeah.
I guess those were grounded out. And that's Lynch at his best as well. That one was, I used to go to this grocery store in Scottsdale when I lived there. And I would go into the store and they would play 80s music. And there'd be these old people bopping around to these songs that were well before they probably stopped listening to music. So they're all new, even though they're 30 years old. And you're hearing all this Maneater and whatever. But one day I was in there and that we were trying to figure out what to do. And I had written that you guys played the other one for, well, there's a million for him, but you played another one that I had written, but there wasn't one that was perfect yet. And I heard We Built This City, and I just texted Lynch and I was like, how about this one? I got home like 15 minutes later, I had lyrics. So yeah. I mean,
he's on.
That really makes the song.
So where are we at? Are we getting down? What's our next move, Max Spada?
The winner. We are crowning the champion.
We've already had the voting, yeah.
We're crowning the champion.
It's time to reveal the winner of Banks Bracket Madness. A tournament that lasted longer than many Trump appointees. To recap, last week's Final Four had two upsets. The powerhouse, 2000 podcasts, was bested by the original Rotten Tomatoes game theme. And the KLS classic, In the Grotto, was taken out of the tourney by Downtown Funk. But which will win the title of Banks Best? We'll find out in 1 minute.
Before we do, let's talk to the man behind the music. Which we already did. Here's your winner. With 2,079 votes to 1,192 votes, the winner of the 2019 Banks Bracket Madness Tournament is...
Holy...
Even Rich is shocked.
A spritz of hot H2O, that talcum powder dumped down below. We're coating on his pube curls, growing some for Monday cheeses. Sweating, swampy, his ass has got to smell shitty. His musk is strong like a sumo thong. He stinks so bad, but he's witty. His balls smell like clams, like the boots of a fisherman. His nuts smell like clams, make my nose want to retire, man. His junk reeks like clams. Ain't no showers for the ace, man. His balls smell like clams. Lynette, Natalia, you're sunny, hosing down. His balls stink, hallelujah. His balls stink, hallelujah. His balls stink, hallelujah. His downtown funk gon' give it to you. His downtown funk gon' give it to you. His downtown funk gon' give it to you. Since New Year's showering, he has not. Jesus, Adam, just watch. Come on.
All right, we get it.
Why are you so angry?
We've heard it.
Lyrically, that is a very strong.
It's strong.
It's, tight.
It's very strong.
Since New Year's, he has showered not.
Go to check out Rich Banks' music if you like. Rich, what are you doing in Arkansas?
Well, Adam, that's the question Teresa Strasser asked me the first week I moved. What the hell are you moving to Arkansas for? I work from home. I mean, I do voiceover from a booth in the morning. In the afternoon, I do music for publishers, and I can live anywhere I want. I've been coming here for 20 years to Northwest Arkansas. And my brother-in-law got a job out of college with Walmart Television. He does all the celebrity videos and all that stuff, the endorsement stuff. Yeah, and so we've been visiting. The first 10 years, you couldn't have paid me to buy a home here. Now I'm looking at a place with 4 acres and a shop in the back and all that junk. And I'm going to buy this next summer. So, you know, the second 10 years, it's kind of like, I'll tell you what it's like. It's sort of like Austin, Texas in Texas. It's this northwest part. Everyone's from somewhere else. All of our friends are, you know, from L.A., from Jersey, from Atlanta, wherever. They've all been transplants, corporate jobs, and so forth. So, we looked it over a couple of years ago, rented a house, and said, okay,
Rich,
let's do it.
Let me tell you what I was looking for. When I said, hey, Rich, what are you doing in Arkansas? Just chilling.
Yeah.
All right. We got
Duplicating
out there.
So Rich's favorite part about Arkansas is it's nothing like Arkansas.
I don't want to break down the entire real estate market, but how much is 4 acres with a nice plot, work? Just make us all depressed here in L.A. How much is it?
Yeah, get ready. Get ready. Out in L.A., I rented a house that was on sale for $729 back in 06, and it was 1,700 square feet. This house is just under 4,000 square feet with a shop, 4 acres, $499.
Oh, my God.
Look at everybody.
God bless you.
And by the way, four acres is, you get a lot out here in Los Angeles on half an acre. That's a double lot. Yeah. I mean, that's a big spread.
Yep.
4 acres, that is a ton. All right, Dawson, you got a little more VO for us?
Yeah, before we hang up with Rich. It's time to do something that's never been done before. In over a decade of Dick, the parody pen has never been turned on Mr. Banks.
Oh, boy.
Until now. Like Band-Aid, the concert for Bangladesh, and We Are the World. On one special day, after a taping of the Adam Carolla Show, the employees gathered to sing a message of hope, love, and an expression of pain for victims of harassment. Chris, Gary, Dylan, Matt, Brian, Kaylin, Gina, and me. This one's for us and by us.
There is a guy who likes to write some songs. He's the guy whose name is Rich Banks. The songs are insulting.
Give us a raise.
To every one of us.
And now, Rich, we have a song for you. We won't stand by listening to you say that I'm dumb, incompetent, and gay.
I don't like songs about my great big memories
and my dumps the size of manatees. Fuck you, Rich Banks. We are your victims. We are the ones you sing the songs about. So go suck a dick.
Is it Chris? Is that your life?
Just be one.
Your job is safe. If in fact, you're compensated for what you do. Your position is safe here at Corolla Digital, I meant to say.
You're
much more
another,
prestigious
another
than yeah, much more, anyone can get a check.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
this paid for work.
The real honor is just being asked to work.
Being part of the
bono,
team.
Being part of the team. That's right.
You're
that's
welcome is what we're trying to say.
That's right. All right. Should we set, should people check you out on Twitter at Rich Banks Music?
They sure can. Hey, Adam, one question for you.
Mm.
I won't get this chance again to ask. Well, I guess I could, but how about this? How about either I restore a Porsche 1978 Porsche 928, or I buy a Maserati Quattroporte for fun to drive around? It's a 2012, I believe, or 16. I can't remember.
He really is saving money out there in Arkansas.
Yeah. Plus, if you're in Arkansas, there on every corner, there's a place that works on exotic Italian automobiles. You pull up there in a Chevy, you're screwed, but you pull up in a Maserati Quattroporte.
You're right about that.
Yeah.
You're right about that.
It's a great sounding name, Quattroporte, but it really just means four holes, like four openings. Like, you
I've
know,
seen
like
movie.
If you called a Ford to four opening,
right.
Like four doors. Yeah. I'd get
I love the car.
I get it. I'd get the new one. They were $110,000 when they were new. You could pick one up all day long for like $34,000 now with like super low mileage, right?
That's real close. It's in Dallas. It'll cost like $800 to ship it.
Get it. Get it and be the biggest pimp in Arkansas.
The king of Arkansas.
I got that shop. I want to restore something, but I don't know if I want to take a 1978 928 on. I've been obsessed with that car since Top Gear days when they did the Porsche Challenge. Anyway, whatever. But yeah, I love that car. But yeah, no restore. Just go. I don't even have a, you know.
They're doing those 928s with LS motor swap, which anyone who's listening may, it's a Corvette motor, just cheaper, easier crate motor, blah, blah, blah. All right. Thanks, Rich.
Love you, Rich.
Love you, Rich.
Good job, Rich.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thanks. I was in Arkansas. I was telling, we're talking about like sort of bad mascots and bad whatever. The one that doesn't get brought up, the Razorback.
Okay. Mm.
It's a fanged pig.
It's a pig.
It's a giant wild boar with huge tusks coming out, and it's on the side of a helmet. We were complaining because the Jets, the stupid Jets, the New York Jets, their new helmet just says Jets. Right. Just block letter. Yeah. Like, hey, Jets, what's the name of your team? Jets. Jets. Right. Like, okay, but have an F-4 Phantom, like, in a dive.
Attack formation.
Machine guns coming out or whatever it is. Don't just write the name of your stupid thing. And I saw, like, Arkansas Razorbacks. They don't write Razorbacks. They have a crazy wild boar.
With feral.
And it's, and, but if you look at the helmet, the guy's, the thing's running at a full clip. It's got his fangs sticking out. Yeah. It's coming.
Scary.
It's coming for you, man. And its Razorback is up like a Rhodesian Ridgeback.
That's
like, come
good.
On now. Jets.
People just think you're that Hawaiian pop group from the 80s.
That's right.
The Jets.
The Jets. That's right.
Mm. Yeah.
They had the Jets. I remember those guys. All right. Let me tell you. Well, Duff's out there. We'll bring him in 1 second. First, Tommy John, warm weather. It's now here. They got a lot of new arrivals, prints, colors, patterns for summer. Head to TommyJohn.com. Where both, I think I'm wearing mine.
Oh, burgundy.
I call it eggplant, but that's fine. Both men's and women's underwear sport a no wedgie guarantee, comfortable stay put waistbands and fabrics, soft, light. They move with you. All new, insanely soft second skin polo, reinventing casual comfort. Everything they do. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like when Porsche makes a mountain bike. You don't have to go like, is it a good mountain? No, of course it's a good mountain bike. Porsche makes it. Everything Tommy John makes is good. And they have the new Air collection for the ladies. And it's breathable fabric and no visible panty line guarantee. Perfect for the yoga pants or fitted dresses. All backed by the best pair you'll ever wear. It's free guarantee, right, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam now and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
Great all-round guy, Duff McKagan, in studio right after this.
Darkest days, the deals we made on temple grounds, that empty sound. God's not around.
Tenderness, that is the title track. Duff McKagan is the artist behind that song, and it's available everywhere starting May 31st. Is that correct? With Shooter Jennings producing, by the way. Good to see you, Duff.
Good seeing you guys.
I'm so glad to, and I'll give you guys some tour dates and stuff like that coming up. I'm always happy to see that you're sober and into mountain biking and martial arts and all that good stuff, especially after watching that whole Motley Crue thing on Netflix. But did you watch that special?
I watched the movie, yep.
Did it resonate with you, or did you go, oh, that's nothing, or did it seem like you guys back in the day?
They were for real. Guns went out and toured with them in 87 when nobody really knew who we were yet.
So you guys were opening for them.
Yeah.
And was that a pretty accurate depiction of how they rolled?
They were very professional about their usage of drugs and alcohol. Like they had code. Wow. They had guys with walkie-talkies and code numbers for different drugs. And we couldn't afford the amounts they were doing. We had no money. We were like, wow.
There was no trickle-down effect? They weren't kicking anything down?
Your scraps?
We got scraps. Okay. For sure. Okay. Oh, yeah. But yeah. They were professional about it.
Did, nothing wrong with Motley Crue, although, I don't know. I like Guns N' Roses quite a bit more, and I like Motley Crue sonically. So when you have a band open for you, like, you know, I'm a comedian. I don't know if I want the next Chris Rock opening for me. And I don't know where Guns N' Roses were back then, but...
No, when we finally got to a point where we headlined, and that was not until the Illusions Records.
Mm-hmm.
So on that whole Appetite tour, unless we did clubs, we brought a bands that we liked. So we had TSOL and and whatever, but we were playing smaller places. But on Illusions, no, we brought Soundgarden, Faith No More, Motorhead, Body Count.
But how about Motley Crue having you guys open for them?
We opened for everybody.
But did they care that you guys maybe rocked a little harder than they did?
They were really on top. That was Girls, Girls, Girls. I think they had Whitesnake opening for them before us, and then Whitesnake blew up with the
Here I go. Yeah, here I go.
Right.
Yeah. I love that song, by the way.
Tawny.
Yeah.
That video, the whole thing, right?
Right.
And Whitesnake suddenly was huge. So they went out and did their own headlining tour, and they just needed somebody for like the last 3 weeks of this tour, whatever, however long.
Oh, I see. So you didn't do a full.
We did the South. And we had like, you know, our seven people who got there early to see us.
Right.
All right, our band. And then Motley would come on.
Would they leave? How big a gap? And I don't know if this varies. Probably varies from band to band. Like, how big a gap would they leave between you, Guns N' Roses, leaving the stage and Motley Crue entering the stage?
God, these are
tough questions.
Long time ago,
by the time they hit the stage, right?
I don't know, half an hour for I don't know.
So sometimes
had a lot of pyro to set up.
Were the places like half full or
for us?
Yeah.
Not even.
Not even.
No.
Well, nobody, the joke's on them, because they could have seen Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue, and they wouldn't have, years later, they wouldn't have thought it would have been in that order. Yeah. But
yeah, we did some tours. We toured with Iron Maiden across Canada and down the West Coast when nobody knew who we were. And we were a little too, like, I guess, punk rock for the Iron Maiden crowd. And
you guys opened for the Stones at one point.
We opened for the Cult. That was our first tour.
Right.
And we had like the seven people, but the Cult liked us. They had a couple of the guys had seen us at the Marquee in London, and they just wanted to bring out a band they liked, and that was very cool of them. We opened for Alice Cooper and Megadeth in theater. So, you know, Alice has got all of his stuff set up.
Yeah. Sure.
Megadeth's got all of their stuff set up, and then we're at the front of the stage, you know, and I remember there's a couple of gigs, like to get to the other side of the stage, I'd have to jump over Steven's kick drum because it was right up against the front.
Yeah. I know that for everyone else who doesn't know this, the Cult liked you guys so much, one of their guys became a member of your band, the drummer.
That was the later.
I know. It's not the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Well, there's a moral of the story here, kids, which is don't sleep on the opening act. Because if you like the band, there's a good chance the band that's opening for them is good because you like them and they picked a band they like and they've.
They vetted it,
and I can't tell you how many millions of A-list rock celebrities I've spoken to that just told you about opening for somebody else at some point to a half-filled or less crowd.
Yeah, I when I go to shows myself, I always I think probably even before like I was the opening band for all this 87 doing all that stuff, I always like to see the opening bands, you know, and sometimes you get really surprised by who you see. So I do that.
Do you, what's the scene like now in, rock and roll? Is it a good scene? Is there stuff going on the Sunset Strip? Is there a resurgence? Like in stand-up comedy, there's a resurgence. It's a good scene now, but I don't know what it's like for rock and roll.
I saw that. You see the, Twilight Zone, the comedian episode, the first.
Oh, the new Netflix one?
Yeah. The Jordan Peele?
The CBS.
Oh, yeah, it's CBS? Network. Oh, is it on CBS? It's on like CBS.com or something like that.
I think
that.
It's
but
Network.
Anyway.
I think it's CBS.
We watched it after the fact. You can get it through YouTube and it's a CBS.com thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about a comedian.
Is it Kumail in it?
Yes.
Yes, Kumail Nanjiani?
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, I
can't say his name, but that's
I'm pretty
that's
sure
him.
He is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, yeah, I noticed comedy's making a huge comeback, stand-up.
It is. So where would rock be? Because, like, let's just say it hit its zenith in the late 80s or early 90s or first in the early 70s, and then it peaked again in 92 or whatever. Where's it at now, if you could drill down on it?
You know I'm a dad, right?
Yeah, you don't know. You're right.
But because I am a dad, I actually get to see. My daughter, Grace, has her band, The Pink Slips, and I get to go out and
that's
see.
Good name.
That is a good name. Yeah. I know HMS Hood, but it's, but it's solid.
It's like, you know, Highland Park and Echo Park are the hip places, not Sunset Strip. anymore. Mm. I did go to the Roxy last night and did see TSOL and, oh, and the Dwarves.
That's punk rock from back in the day.
Back in the day.
Toxic Shock Syndrome?
The True Sons of Liberty.
True Sons of Liberty? Or
yeah. True Sons of
the other one. With
they're great. They're on top of their game right now. A couple weeks ago, I drove by myself to Costa Mesa to this big punk rock thing, and I saw Fear with the original band, Lee Vang, and the original drummer, and it was amazing.
I love New York's all right if you like saxophones, because I'm not sure exactly what the message is to that song. It's a punk rock song with a saxophone in it, and I don't know if it's an indictment of saxophones or New York. Like, I feel like Piccolos would be a better one for Lee Vang, who also has had and probably still does have quite an acting career, right?
Man, I was kind of scared. I actually finally met Lee Vang, and I'm still scared of him from, like, 1980, right?
And, well, yeah, they're like him and John Doe were the guys from X, were the guys who, like, went from punk rock to sort of acting. They keep floating around the acting department.
Yeah.
How'd you get hooked up with find me New York's All Right if you like saxophones. That just makes me laugh.
Wow, you got it right.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
This is so fun.
What is happening?
I think Kimmel's playing the saxophone actually in this. Now, do you get a good saxophonist, like a session guy?
No.
Just get the drunkest guy in the street you can find?
One of the band members just wail on it.
I think that's a real cat playing on this.
I just want to know if that guy's super skilled. Yeah, do you have to be good to play bad? All right, we get it. How'd you, Shooter Jennings.
Well, we just, we're going all over the place.
Yeah, we're all over the place. I got to get back to you. Shooter, how'd that relationship come about?
Well, I've known Shooter since he moved to L.A. Mm-hmm. He had a band called Stargun that he moved from Nashville with, and they opened for my band Loaded. It was in 2001. And I recognized Shooter. I didn't know that he was a Waylon Jennings kid. He was just this young guy, but he had that. I talked to him for a while. He was one of those lifers. And in the music world, you can tell. Out of every 10 people you meet in the band, there's one, like, you can tell it's a lifer, like the real deal. And Shooter was one of those guys. And I recognized that back then. And he stayed here and created this great career for himself. We remained friends. He's has little kids and kind of known him through all this. My kids are older and I wrote these songs out on this tour we just did, the Guns tour, which is 2.5 years of inarguably one of the most interesting times in our in our history.
Yeah. What was interesting about it?
I wrote a column for the Seattle Weekly for 5 years. So that's a weekly column for 5 years. I wrote for ESPN. I wrote for Playboy.com. And the reason I bring that up is when you write once a week or sometimes twice a week, if you're at two columns going on, I became an observationalist.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of by rote, I had to write a column for the next week. I had kind of, what am I going to write about? And I do read... since I've been sober, which is 25 years now, I'm this armchair history professor. That's all I read is history. And I'll take like a Roman history and I'll read like three sides of it. I'll read, I'll get in the D-Day and I'll read a...
You know World War II?
I do.
HMS Hood?
Ring a bell.
Sunk by the Bismarck? Sorry.
Sorry.
Stepping back to an earlier part of the show. But right, sorry. Okay. Yeah, so it's interesting. You have to write a column, so you start observing. In a way, you become like a plainclothes cop or something.
And I don't
like walking through a mall. Mm-hmm. You just kind of start looking. You're not shopping. You're looking.
And I don't mean to be, and I'm not. I don't want to put anybody off. I'm not observing or judging them. I'm just observing. And on this tour, I'd written two books. On this tour, I thought of writing a book of my observations while traveling. This is all I've done for the last 30-something years is travel the world.
Right.
And this time around, I was watching all like the cable news before we left on tour. So it's the election. It's the run-up. It's January, February, March, April, and I'm watching all the cable news. I'm going kind of bananas. I'm checking Twitter. You know, first thing I go downstairs in the morning, drink coffee, watch the cable news, and people yelling and screaming and talking about a divide and all of this stuff. And you kind of fall into it. Mm-hmm. And I did. And then we went out on tour. First tour leg was American. And what I do on tour is I go and see nerdy tourist stuff. I went to Monticello, I went Little Bighorn. I do a World War One museum in Kansas City. And I go on the guy boat, the alligator boat down in Louisiana.
Yeah, Okefenokee Swamp.
I do all that stuff. And
I think that it's sort of quaint, but and people sort of look down their nose at it. But you should. If you're going to be traveling, don't sit in your room and watch TV.
No, I don't. I never do that. Never. Right. And what happens when you turn off the news and stop looking at Twitter and actually talking to people and hanging out and doing things? Because when you go be a tourist, you end up talking to people and then you go get a coffee or whatever. And this divide that they were screaming about on the news, I just didn't see it. Mm. You know, we have much more in common with each other than what separates us by a mile. And you know, when 9/11 happened here, I never saw in my life, and two of my brothers were in Vietnam, and I walked with my mom when Martin Luther King got shot. I was five. Mm-hmm. But I remember things like that. But in Nixon, I remember all that and the gas lines in the 70s. But I never saw anything like what happened in America after 9/11, how every neighbor had each other's back. Mm-hmm. You know, the hurricane in Houston just 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, people didn't ask who you voted for. People just came and helped.
I've always thought, you know, they'd always – I grew up watching those 70s movies where, like, the woman was being raped in the alley and everyone's just pulling their shades going, I don't want to get involved. Mm. You take a car and on any highway or freeway in this country and you have that car get into an accident and be off by side – somebody's going to jump out of their car and try to help almost immediately. I don't care if it's I'm with her bumper sticker on the back or MAGA hat sticker, whatever it is. That's how we are. You don't think about any accident you've ever passed before the paramedics or the cops or whatever get there. There's always three cars pulled over and somebody standing there. We're pretty much that way.
I believe that to be true.
We're much better than the news wants us to believe.
And it's amazing, man. And then we went to South America where you couldn't get those news channels. And I stopped looking at Twitter, like people I follow. I just stopped. I would post like soundcheck, Sao Paulo, you know, mm-hmm. And not look at the Twitter. And the quality of my life was getting so much better and better and better. And, you know, we'd have political discussions together, you know, the band or crew guys or it's not like an uninformed, but
privately.
Yeah, privately.
But the
privately, exactly. we traveled, you know, to Germany. I played in Poland in a city that a couple months before 100,000 Nazis had gathered. You know, this is just last year.
I didn't get the email.
So, you didn't get the
check your spam folder.
But your invitation was lost.
Saw a lot of interesting, you know, Italy, mm-hmm. you see this far right thing coming. And then, but reading as much history as I see, as I've read, you know, things are cyclical. This too shall pass. And the important thing to remember is we got each other's backs through that when it gets thin. You know?
I think the news is making a lot of money.
Tons of money.
Convincing everybody that everyone has a target on their back and everyone's evil and everything else. And the reality is people are pretty decent. Like, I've done an experiment when we were doing morning radio. I dropped a wallet with cash in it. I think it was about $100 worth of cash. Yeah, intentionally. And there was nothing in the wallet other than, if found, call this number. And I'd drop it in all parts of the town, good and bad, and just drop it on the sidewalk and bus stops. And invariably, the phone would ring. And it'd just go, hey, I found your wallet. And the money would be there. too, because most people aren't criminals. Most people are just going to work, and they see your wallet, and they pick it up, and they go, if that were my wallet, I'd hope the person would call. And they do. Like, we do such a doom and gloom. I mean, you know, the news is there's killer bees that are coming from South America, and there's guys driving around in vans abducting strangers and sexually molesting them, and everybody, you know, Trump's Hitler, and everyone's the worst, and everyone's going at each other. But the reality is most people are pretty decent.
That is the reality that I found anyhow.
It doesn't sell any newspapers, but that's
top story today. People are decent.
Well, everyone the story is everyone lives in the middle. Most it's called the middle because that's the majority of it. If you look at a bookshelf, you have book ends. Right. Those are the ends, and then all the other books are in the middle. And the middle is where everyone's always going to live. I mean, where the vast majority of people are going to just live in the middle. And the news wants to focus on the bookends and what the bookend, the right bookend or the left bookend, what they're up to today. And all we get is a never-ending cycle on what that bookend is up to, but they never discuss the vast library that lies in the middle because it's not that exciting. Yeah. Those people just go to work and mow their own lawn and hug their kids.
So what we I agree with you 110%. And what we miss is this news, and obviously these panels they get keeps you on the news. Mm-hmm. They've figured out formulas and they're just selling ads. And I used to play in punk rock bands in the late 70s, early 80s. It was always against the man, and the man is the lobbyist, it's the same crap it's ever been. It's always been. And if you believe that that some politician is doing something in your best interest, unfortunately, with all the lobbying and whatnot's going on, that's just rarely going to be the truth.
My default setting is nobody's going to do anything for you. So go out with that in mind. Look, if somebody does something for you, it's gravy. It's all awesome gravy. But I don't assume family members are going to do anything for me, much less politicians I've never met before. So just assume
they're not
doing anything for you, but also assume they didn't put a target on your back either. They don't know you. They don't care about you. They'd like your vote. Other than that, they're moving on. So you just, with that in mind, go forth and do whatever you want in life.
Adam Carolla, I'm going to take you on my press tour. I'm going to do.
Thanks
for saying everything that I mean. It's just the truth. And I had a wonderful. I was going to write a book about just observations. I would write little vignettes. So it would be the beginning of chapters. And I had an acoustic guitar with me on tour. And I took one of the vignettes and I played two chords to it. And it became the first song I wrote for this record. And that's when I got the idea to make a record instead of writing a book. I wrote about six or eight songs. My manager, Brian Klein, thought about Shooter Jennings producing the record. He just got done with the Brandy record and sent the songs to Shooter. Shooter was super down with it. We both had sort of the exact same musical interpretation ideas and soundscaping for the record, and it was working with Shooter was one of the best musical experiences I've had in my life.
Did you guys ever go out or have experience with Van Halen? I think about them sometimes, and the reason I think about them is because I think they're nuts.
Well, you just took a left turn.
No, I like Van Halen, but I realize that. All you have to have is sort of Eddie Van Halen, who's nutty, and David Lee Roth, who's nutty, and then you put them together, and then it burns bright, but it burns fast. Did you have any Van Halen experience?
Never
or stories?
I remember the first time meeting David Lee Roth, like in the 1986 at some party. That was cool. He was David Lee Roth.
Sure.
I think he just left and he did that Eat Him and Smile record.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Eddie, I've become friends with over the years. Super, super cool guy.
What do we need to know about Eddie Van Halen? I've never met him. I've never interviewed him. He seems difficult to me. Is that...
Oh, I don't.
Is that right?
I mean, I don't know him super well, but he's a really nice, mellow guy, and he probably just doesn't. I would imagine him just doesn't like the hoopla of the whole thing, doing interviews and being asked strange questions, probably about
about David Lee Roth.
He seems to have it kind of sorted out.
Oh, he is? Yeah. And he's, it seems to me, I don't know, I guess I'm looking at it as a fan or a fan of money or whatever it is. I always go like, you guys could just get along. You could or stay semi-sober and get along pretty well. You just go out and make kajillions of dollars. But no.
Well, they did that tour, right?
I think there's going to be a lot of people laying in bed at some point when they're in their 80s just going, if I'd only just gotten along with this guy or that guy, I'll probably have 10 of those stories myself. But like, just would have been an easier life.
I mean, I see your point.
Any good Axl Rose stories, updates, or is Axl just perpetually Axl?
Man, that guy, I got to tell you, he... on this tour we did, I saw something, you know, as a young man, I knew he was an amazing singer and all of that, talent, you know, born with talent and then developed it by working on it. But this tour we just did, we're playing 3 and 3.5 hour shows. And the amount of preparation that guy does, hour and a half warm-ups. I'm in bed asleep, and he's still warming down.
Really?
After the show. So he's singing
vocally.
Right. And so he's singing for an hour and a half, then 3.5 hour show, and then another hour and a half warm down. And the guy's just become a master of a master vocalist. He's a master. I really...
Is he better than back in the day?
I think he's the best stand-in there is, period. Yeah.
How's he doing emotionally? Is he stable? Is he on time? If you called him right now, like, what would he say? Like,
I mean, I do understand the interest in all of that. I'm here to talk about my record. Axel's great. He's one of the funniest guys I know. And he would, make some joke about what you're talking about right now. He's doing great. I really am I become like this super fan of his work ethic.
Well, it's so at the beginning, you're just sort of, I don't know. I guess it's like we all know those guys who are like gifted athletes. They had a great physique and they're just touched by God. And they kind of got by on that. They didn't work that hard, but they still beat everyone on Sunday when when the game started or whenever day, whatever the metaphor is, whatever the sport is. And then later on, those guys, as they got older and the body started to give out just naturally, they had to now work on technique and rehearsal and preparation, all the stuff they didn't really need to do as much when they just were young and gifted and touched by God and everything like that. But sometimes you get better because now the physical body's, I don't want to say giving out, but you can't just rely on what you have to stretch out. You got to warm up. You're going to get hurt if you don't do that. So now you're more focused and you've actually upped your game.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
That's a very fair assessment. And I know, like, even with me, like, a misnomer probably about Guns N' Roses at the beginning was we were a bunch of fuck ups and the songs we wrote just fell out of the sky. Mm-hmm. But nobody worked harder than that band. We had 2-a-day rehearsals, you know, always. That's all we did was play and write songs, and we worked hard from the get-go. What happens, after I got sober, and in my 40s and 50s now, like when I work out and kickbox and ride my mountain bike, I have more mental discipline now than I ever have. You know, and I was probably... And I plan to do it again like when I'm 58. At 48, I was in the best shape. You know, you see the commercials. I'm in the best shape of my life. But I was, you know, because I had the mental discipline. I knew how to train smart, train really hard, out-train the kid in the gym who's just in there kind of hitting bags because he's got natural cardio.
Yeah.
But I will train harder than him. I will, you know.
I'll fight smarter
than he.
Probably a couple months younger than you. Is there something going on that didn't seem to be around when we were young and we're talking about middle-age 55-year-old dudes.
I'm 55.
Where they're, I'm turning 55 in 2 months or a month and a half or something
double
like
nickel.
That.
Welcome.
But I feel more focused mm-hmm. and more into everything than my dad's friends seemed to be when I was a kid. Like, everyone was kind of looking to ratchet it down, get a sweater with some suede patches on the sleeves, smoke a pipe, put on a few pounds. Like, I feel like all the guys I know that are in their 50s are getting more focused, or there's something going on. I don't know if it's a renaissance. I don't know if it was always that way. I don't know.
I owe it all. I think it's all the Rolling Stones.
Mm.
Wow.
That's true. Yeah.
They're out there still doing it. I mean, they've got me by 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right?
At least.
Yeah.
And they're out there like killing it. And like, they make me feel like a kid. I better get up my ass and start working.
Duff's nickname in that band is Lard Ass. Because he's at 4.5% body fat.
Hey, Chubbs, head over that bass.
Put down that donut and turn on that amp.
But band alive. Yeah. I mean, I've seen pictures of my dad at 55, you know, and I remember those days, like retired fireman at that point.
Oh, yeah.
55.
Maybe it's all the hair restoration and boner pills. Maybe as long as your boner works and your hair's full,
you're a young man.
You're Peter Pan with a boner.
I just had this thought. Maybe this can spark some ideas or your recollections of the first album you bought. The first CD, and this was, you know, 1992, that I bought with my own money. Well, my parents gave me money as a gift for birthday or something. Christmas, I don't remember what it was, to go and buy Bruce Springsteen's Human Touch and Lucky Town. I like Bruce Springsteen. And I was like, all right, I went to another record store and like, screw that. I'm getting User Illusion 1 and 2.
Okay.
And that was the first CD. That was back when, this is boring to everyone who wasn't a teenager at that time, but that's when they came in the tall cardboard right. boxes. Remember? Like, they mm-hmm. were like, you know, yeah. long and rectangular.
So they would fit,
they would
in,
fit
the record.
In the slot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember your first record. You bought your own money. Obviously, records were given to you or whatever.
I bought Kiss Alive 1. I had a paper yeah. route and I had lawn mowing jobs. And I didn't know who Kiss was, but that I was 11. Mm-hmm. That album cover with the fire and the mm-hmm. thing, and I got the record home, the records, because it was double record, and I didn't know it was a live record. And I got home and I put it on. I'm like, oh man, mm-hmm. I didn't want a live record. But then I, of course, fell in love with Strutter and Firehouse and all of that stuff. Second record I bought was Pat. Same idea. There's a guitar player in a record company. Guy's office, the record company guy's wearing a suit and tie, you know, great. And the guitar player's about to play in the back, the other side of the record. The office is all blown up because the guy just shredded.
Yeah.
And the guy's hairpiece is askew sure. and the tie. So that was Pat Travers putting it straight.
Oh, nice. Another big live album was Boom Boom Out Go the Lights, right? That was a Pat Travers.
But at that point, I was well into the Pistols and the Clash. So mm-hmm. those were my Kiss was really my intro. Mm-hmm. Into the Pistols, because I got a Pistols record maybe 8 months later. Mm-hmm. And like that three chord loud guitar rock of Kiss was a great introduction into this exotic English semi-political band that I'm from a family of eight kids. Mm-hmm. And punk rock was this thing I could finally have of my own. Right. You know, when you're eight kids, you want something, anything of your own. And so finally I had a music genre of my own. I thought.
I'll save some time. Gina's Dolly Parton.
No, that was...
Sweater of many quilted patches or whatever it was.
Beatles Revolver, and second wow. one was Rubber Soul.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my...
Classy.
And not in the decade that it was put out in by a long stretch.
My parents probably had Hard Day's Night, and maybe we got... I think for me, it'd be like Beach Boys' Endless Summer, I think may have been the first one. But I also would buy George Carlin records anytime could, but it was a big deal. I mean, buying a record was a big ticket item. You had to save up. You had to go down there. And also, you had to really make a choice. Like, you weren't going to get this one, that one, and that one. You were going to get one, and it better work. Like, it better be worth your $6 or whatever it was.
Totally.
And it actually, The whole process was that much more satisfying because you would listen to the whole album. There was a whole foreplay to it, like riding your bike to the Licorice Pizza or the Music Plus or whatever, thumbing through stuff, trying now narrowing it down, kind of thinking, God, which one do I squeeze the trigger on?
But we always, and then you get the record, you play the record, whatever it is, and you read all the stuff on the back of the record.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Pull the sleeve out. Okay, you know who produced the record, where it was recorded at, who the engineer was, you know, if it's a rock band, like every player's name, every thing. And I think that's kind of, that's gone. We just started getting vinyl at our house again. So I'm replenishing vinyl, and my girls... A couple of years ago when we first started doing this, I saw them, like, we put on a record and they would look at the sleeve and look at all this stuff and like, how come nobody knows where this record was recorded? I'm like, you know, because you're listening to stuff on Spotify.
Yeah. Right.
But you listen to half a song and then move on to another song.
Looking at the album covers was always great. The Ohio Players were always great.
Amazing. Do you remember the story, right?
Hot chicks.
Yeah.
They always had hot chicks on their album covers. Or back when we didn't have the internet porn or whatever. You have to go to Ohio Players and check out a few of their album covers.
Ohio Players.
Weren't they fun?
Fire. Yeah. And then...
Right.
Chili Peppers did it later.
But they always had hot... chicks on
the draw.
They're kind of the Two Live Crew in the 70s.
Oh, sweet. Oh, right.
Like
wow.
Hot black mamas dumping
her.
Honey on them.
Nubian queens.
Putting that fire out and everything.
You remember the story? We're the same age, right, Adam?
Yeah.
But the honey being poured on her, and there's a siren in the song, right?
Yeah.
And the story was that she got burned by the hot honey, and that was actual...
I heard attacked by fire ants. Heard they had to pump a gallon of honey from Rod Stewart's belly because he sucked off every
so
bee in the...
He licked off every girl in the Ohio Players album.
All right.
That's the lore.
Let me hit Bet Online and we'll do some news with Duff. BetOnline.ag, even though March Madness is ending, sports in April is a huge. Baseball's in full effect. The Masters is this weekend. Is that this weekend? NBA, check on that, Max Pana. Playoffs are around the corner. You can get in on all the action. Yeah, it is this weekend. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. Use the promo code podcast1 for a 50% welcome bonus. Baseball season's going. NBA, Sonny's going nuts for the NBA. He had his March Madness brackets, and now he's moving to the
Mariners,
NBA.
Mariners are going to go 160-2.
Oh, my God.
Mariners are unbeatable. Don't sit on the sidelines, and don't forget promo code podcast1 or text BETNOW to 238-669. Receive a 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sports experts. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll do the news right after this.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.